Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Spesh.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
Going fantastic.
Oh, the storms of winter.
I
glorious.
Had to walk between buildings at work today, and I thought this could be a Teams meeting. I don't have to go in person. Anyway, so I gathered a bunch of the guys together. We all walked across site, and it was brutal. But thankfully, the wind was at our backs. And we got there, and I see that, oh, there's a bunch of people joining by Teams. I could have done it by Teams. It was cold. Everybody's freezing. Everybody's complaining. We were slipping and sliding all over the place. I almost fell down twice. And it was a safety meeting. So I'm going to kill myself going across site to go
for
to
a
safety meeting.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, at least we're getting snow and lots of it.
True. True. Yeah. It's so you can see on calm days that Lake Ontario is starting to freeze up on the edges, but then the wind comes up like today and it just piles up on shore. So I got to get the kids down on shore on Lake Ontario soon because all the big mountains of snow are starting to show up on the beaches. So it's mountains of ice, I should say.
Yeah.
So how exciting.
February, March. We're only a couple months away from spring.
We are I think we're only 47 weeks away from Christmas.
Yeah. That's what, there's one guy we know on social media, and every 25th he posts, hey, it's only X amount of months till Christmas.
52
weeks
the
other
Christmas.
Day I happened to notice it was the 25th, and I told Tracy there, hey, you ought to send him a message and say, hey, do you realize it's only? And then got home that night, and about an hour before I had gotten home, he had posted, hey, 11 months till Christmas. And did you know there's a middle finger emoji? Because there's a lot of people putting it there.
Is there a middle finger emoji?
Yeah, you can't post it under the picture, but in the comments.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, apparently there's a middle finger emoji. So.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm going to use that one.
Right? when you have to go to a safety meeting.
I know.
Well, we endured some nice, cold, stormy weather this weekend.
We did.
We went to the Hamilton Adventure Expo. I went both days. You only went one?
Correct.
Yeah.
I wanted to go all three. We wanted to make a weekend of it. I wanted to get there and do the movies on Friday night and so on, but just work hours and time and the time to get down there, and we would have been rushed, and then we would have been abandoning the kids for 3 days.
Build character.
And so, well, they're fine with it, but we'd have to find a family member. Hey, you want to keep our kids alive for 2.5 days?
Two and a half. Yeah, guys, because if you're staying in a hotel.
Yeah.
So the neighbors of.
But we almost did. I seriously considered it. If we could have made the timing work to get down there, would have been. I really want to see the movies.
Yeah.
Friday night, movie night.
Yeah. Well, it would have been nice, but unfortunately, I'm sure your wife is like mine, how she likes to bring that paycheck in and covered mortgage and stuff like that, food on the table, clothes on the kids' back, that sort of stuff, making money.
Silly.
So, yeah. So, yeah, nasty snowstorms, bitter cold.
Yes.
That was the prescription of the weekend. This was the second year for the Hamilton Adventure Expo, and there's some changes over last year. More space for vendors, so people weren't shoulder to shoulder like sardines. I think it was very well spaced out.
It was very nicely spaced out. Like there was a period of time or between 11 and 12 when I was walking around on Saturday, and it's like, oh, it's crowded.
Yeah.
But then it kind of, everybody kind of, it's where everybody entered. Everybody was in that, and then we realized, oh, there's a second
room.
Building,
yeah.
A second room. So, and then people started to spread out. So after about noon, it was very nice.
And it was also depending who was in the presentation building too.
Correct.
So it sort of ebbed and flowed all day on both days.
Yes.
Right. Which was fine. So you could actually get some time to get into the booths and see some stuff and ask questions and check stuff out. You weren't like being hounded and bumped into.
Yeah,
and,
but it was like sort of, it was like a Jumanji herd when a speech or a talk was done, you'd mm-hmm. see that Jumanji herd of
all coming
yeah. back, and there's one door going into where MEC was, and it was like, wait and take your turn back and forth, and one-way traffic only, so that was a bit of a pain, but it worked out.
It worked out.
Yeah.
The building that had the speakers in it was a good size, and you could hear the speakers quite well.
Yeah, the audio was fantastic.
Yeah, only one drawback is that the heating system wasn't up to par.
So I
heard a couple stories.
I would argue that point. I don't think there was a heating system.
Oh, apparently there was.
It was a uninsulated barn, and it smelled like a barn. It did smell like a barn. You could smell the cows and the horses.
It was apparently there was two heating systems. One wasn't working, and the other was broken or something.
Wow.
One was the wrong size or something, and the other one was didn't work.
Oh yeah,
or something. And then they brought in another big heater, and it just didn't
yeah.
do the job. So, but you know what? That has
it was
nothing
fine.
On the organizers of
no,
the event.
No,
that was a pure property
yeah.
issue.
What did they do before the Hamilton Adventure Expo? Because
they didn't have one.
No, what did the organizers do before the expo?
Oh, just regular old people doing their paddling. And
because it is so well done, it seems right? like they've been doing it for like 20 years.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
was so well organized.
I don't think they have been doing anything.
So it's when you're talking like the all the advertising, all the graphics, the layout, the displays, the like they really like it. Just when you walk in there, it's like, huh. This yep. show has been on the go for 20 years now. These
and
guys
this
are
is
old
only
hats.
The second year.
It is, and yep. so even the first year. So they may have been crammed into a tighter space last year, but still, it was really impressively put on.
Yep. And they learned a lot from their first year,
yep.
and you can definitely see they made a ton of changes for this year.
They had to have been organizing. Yep. They must do this for a living, some sort of planning, or who knows what they do.
But don't know.
It was really, really impressive.
All I know is I went there, had a good time.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, it was very good.
Yeah, and honestly, the only bad thing I could say about the whole thing, and it wasn't their fault, was that heating. Because there was one point where there was about five people I wanted to see in a row, so that would have been 5 hours of sitting
yeah.
in that. And there comes a point where you're sitting in that plastic chair, and the cold
yeah.
just
seeps
right
feet.
Up into your... Up through your yeah. feet, up through your butt, into your lower back.
In one of the places, in one of the seats I sat, because I was at a couple of the talks, there was a water bottle under the chair where Siobhan was sitting. And I look at it, and I said, "Do you see that?" She goes, "What?" I pulled the chair back. The water bottle was frozen solid. It's like, I don't know how long I've been sitting there, but it's frozen.
I had a water bottle inside my jacket. When I
yeah.
pulled it out to drink, it was warm.
Yeah.
I put it down by my feet, and then I took a drink. At the end of the
yeah.
the one speaker,
yeah.
and it was nice and cold. But that, if that's the only bad thing
yeah.
we can say
yeah.
about it, then that's pretty good, I must say.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was so well done.
Yeah. Attended presentations. Saw Evan Lefebvre, Marty Morissette, Camper Chris. So Ken Whiting, I was going to go watch Ken Whiting.
I was there for Ken Whiting,
yep.
too. And it
but
was,
he wasn't there.
Yeah.
Ken Whiting turned into a Camper Christina.
Yes,
apparently
she took
he
over.
Was he was sick. So
her thing was really well done. She said yep. she didn't have it fully polished off, but she did a really good job.
Yep.
And she did only half of what she said she would normally have done, but it came off really well. She did
yeah.
she did a really good talk.
Yep. Tori Baird saw most of hers. I walked in a bit late on that one. Ben Beauchamp, Kevin Callan, Adam Schultz. It's nice to see somebody talking about the book you've just finished reading like a month
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, and he didn't, I'm thinking, how are you going to talk about this book?
Yeah.
About Hubert Darrell, who nobody seems to know who he is.
Yeah.
And not spoil it. And so he's talking
True.
About different things and some of the things. He didn't go into a lot of it. He just
yeah.
grazed over some stuff.
Yeah.
And then he says, at the end, you'll have to read the book. You could just hear a collective, ah, come on. So, yeah, saw some really good talks there and,
yeah.
and whatnot. The only one, and I don't know if you saw it, the one on Nahani?
It was getting late in the day. We were cold. We had just been out there, and it's like, you know what? Let's just go home.
Yeah, I'm thinking they're going to be doing the same talk at the Toronto Outdoor Adventure Show. So I turned to John Brower and said, you know what? I'm done. I can't even feel my back right now.
Yeah, it's just too cold.
So we loaded up and headed to Beverly.
The Nahani one was at 5 p.m.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was getting late in the day.
That was after 4 hours. That would have been the fifth hour.
Yeah.
And I was just like, no, and we had to fight the snow all the way home because that was Sunday. We were going to see it as well.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know what? It's nasty out there. I don't mind driving in the nasty weather like that, mm-hmm. but I'd rather not do it in the dark.
Yeah.
So, all good talks. Stopped in, saw a whole lot of vendors, which was nice. Like I said earlier there, because it wasn't shoulder to shoulder, you could stop in at the vendor, you could ask questions, check out what they had.
But sometimes buy a you few stop things. To look at something and it's like you feel, I better move on. I'm going to get run over here.
Yeah.
But it was nice. That
or you're holding it up so no one else can see what they've got.
Somebody else wants to look at this now.
Yeah. Because, I mean, the people are there to sell their stuff, so you don't want to take up all their time if there's 50 people standing in line behind
people with
you,
their money out waiting to buy something.
Yeah. Moving along, buddy. Novacraft Canoes, Algonquin Outfitters, Camp Kitchen, Friends of Tamagami, Halliburton Paddle Shop, Kid Products, Lure of the North, Paddle Co-op, Recreational Barrel Works, and many, many, many others stopped in to chit-chat. We stopped in on the Saturday, did an interview with Super Good Camping. Nice to be interviewees for a change.
Did he bring his own furniture? Did they supply
it? No, that was supplied. Because after he left on Sunday afternoon, like all furniture and stuff was still there. He was gone and there was people just lounging there.
Oh,
like
okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Like they were, I was waiting for one of them to pull out a smoke or a beer or something. Cause they're all just lounging around by the little electric campfire.
It was neat that they provided like a living room setting for the podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. So that was pretty good. It was, and like I say, it was nice to be able to sit down with them and do it live in person mm-hmm. instead of over the internet. And
that's
what I like doing about, you know, when we go to the shows and set up all our gear is to see the people and chat with them in person.
I think that's one of the reasons why I like Lansing, Michigan so much. Yep. It's when we go down to, Quiet Adventure Symposium. You get to talk to and interview people face to face and get to meet a lot of interesting people. So that's why I like that one so much.
Yeah. There is a mix of camping, paddling, and winter stuff at the show. This is what the Toronto Outdoor Adventure Show used to be like many years ago, before mm-hmm. they started inviting very rain gutters, pots and pans for sale.
It got very commercialized. Sort of stuff.
Yeah. But this is what Toronto Outdoor Adventure Show used to be like. It was nice to go and chit-chat with people that you see and all outdoors-oriented. Rain gutters, I don't consider outdoor oriented. Nice to talk to the people from Camp Kitchen. Nice to talk with my buddies over at Friends of Tamagami and hook up with them to say, hey, where are you guys all heading trips this year? And sort of, you know, let them know where I'm going to be up in Tamagami mm-hmm. this year and see if we can all work places out. Had a chat with Corey over at Halliburton Paddle Shop. About my broken paddle.
Oh, yeah.
He said, I had to get you to make a bunch of them that look exactly like it.
Even with a cutout missing tooth.
You know how Kevin Callan does the Happy Camper packs and stuff like that?
Yeah.
It'd be the Paddling Adventures radio paddle. But at the bottom where that big chunk is missing, you could add like a... what's that stuff that they pour into those tables and stuff?
Oh, epoxy.
Resin. The
epoxy resin.
Yeah, put the epoxy, like a clear epoxy and like a sticker of our label or something in there. So it completes the whole paddle, but that chunk,
there's a
piece of resin, right?
There you go.
So we sat there for probably a half an hour. Oh, and you could do this, and you could do that, and you could do that. But you wouldn't want the crack that's going up through the middle in case. Well, you could draw it on. So yeah, it's always good. I mean, it's some good laughs there, and you get some good information and stuff. Picked up some dehydrated foods. There's one place that was, I guess they've now hooked up with a bigger place, so they're just doing a sell-off of stuff. Picked up some of their stuff. Went over to the Camp Kitchen place. picked up a couple of penne bolognese. Bolognese?
I don't
even know how you pronounce that.
Bolognese.
Yeah. Bolognese. Bolognese.
Bolognese.
Picked up a couple of those for our trip and picked up two other things. One of them, so when I go on my canoe trips in the backcountry, if I go trout fishing, usually what I'll do is cut the head off, gut the trout, clean it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I do is put some, usually salt and pepper, some lemon, or sometimes I got like a lemon herb, sprinkle in some of that in there. Then I'll wrap it up in tin foil and cook it over the fire till it's perfect.
Yeah.
And then, so you got a little, you got the trout flavor, but you got a little bit of spice flavor too. Well, they have trout spice with sumac.
Oh.
And it's almost like the bay, what's the bay?
Old Bay.
Old Bay with sumac in it.
Okay.
And it smells really good. So I got some of that. I'm going to try that this summer. Give some of that a whirl. And there's also Red Fife Bannock. Bannock mix made with Red Fife flour. Apparently Red Fife flour came over to Canada and started growing in 1842.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it's like a red wheat.
Where's it originally from? Europe?
I guess it came through Europe, originated in the Ukraine.
Okay.
There's things about Netherlands or Denmark or something like that. Scotland, I've read as well. But apparently it made its way through Scotland to Canada.
So what's the uniqueness of it other than
it's
being
a nutty,
red,
sweet
apparently.
Flavor, apparently.
Okay.
So anyway, I'm going to give this one a whirl as well and see if it's pretty good. So, I mean, it's simple. You just open the bag, pour Bannock into a separate bowl, one cup mix to half cup of water. Fry it in your favorite oil or fat. Yeah, so I'm going to give that one a try. I thought I'd give that, because I've got my own Bannock recipe that I really enjoy. So, and I mean, something like this, too, it doesn't say you have to eat it as it is. I like to throw raisins into mine, and just adds that extra little something. So, could do that as well. So, got that to try as well.
Some people, vehemently hate raisins and stuff. I don't know, I'm okay with raisins.
Well, let me put it to you this way. That makes me happy.
Why?
Because Tracy will make rice pudding. I love rice pudding. I grew up with rice pudding with raisins in it.
My mom would do that.
No one else likes raisins. So Tracy makes two rice puddings, one with raisins and one without. So I get my own rice pudding. So I am. Cheers to all the people that hate raisins.
Cheers.
Cheers to you, my friends.
Some people, they react. It's like, hey, I thought it was chocolate chip cookie, but it wasn't. It was oatmeal raisin. It's like, I don't know. I kind of like the squishiness of a raisin.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why people don't like raisins. But do you not remember getting those little Sun-Made?
Sun-Made in the red box.
Red boxes of raisins?
It's initially, it's a red box of raisins, and when you're done with it, it's a musical instrument.
It is.
And they make the boxes differently now, so that you can't make the noise anymore.
Yeah, that's just
rip-off. But now they're glued shut. They used to be just folded shut.
Kids today will never know.
Never know the pleasure of a musical instrument made out of a raisin box.
Yep. Good times. Good times from our childhood. Sorry, kids of the new millennium.
Yeah.
I went over to see Andy at the Recreational Barrel Works to talk about one of their canoe packs there. It's the set of two rectangular packs that they look like cloth Wannigans sort of thing.
Yep.
Sit on top of each other. They connect to each other. Has a harness on the back and a dump. So it lets you organize your kit into two packs, but it's like the size of one pack.
You can make it into one backpack.
So you can have the top pack and be your kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got your food in it. It's got your cook gear in it, that sort of thing. The bottom one could be like your clothes and a sleeping bag or something like that.
Yeah. Helps you sort your gear instead of everything jammed into one bag.
Yeah. So I pre-ordered one of those kits with a couple of the waterproof liners and a tump for that. So I'll pick that up at the Toronto Outdoor Adventure Show. So that'll be a good thing. If you watch Kevin Callan's and Andy's trip from Opiskwaya on YouTube, Happy Camper YouTube channel, I do believe they took that same one.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm going to pick up one of those. This little jobby, which you can't see, Kid Products, K-I-H-D Products, the jute tube. All it is a jute rope, a thin one, like thick boot lace.
It's got to be impregnated with something, though, is it?
I don't think so. I think it's just jute. And there's a metal tube, a few inches long, and the jute goes through it. And what you do is you buff up the end, like rough up the end, and you take your sparker, and it catches fire so fast. So that when you're at the fire pit trying to get your fire started,
you're not burning.
You're not sitting there with a lighter, flick, 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 yeah. flick, flick, or trying to.
Or a match, trying not to let it burn down your fingers.
You can just hold this big thing of jute that's now like blazing.
Yeah, and now it's a wick.
And it's just a wick. Yeah, it's a big wick that can hold into the fire to start whatever it is, your tinder.
It is very cool.
And then when you're done, you slide the metal tube up over the burning part and it puts it out.
Yeah.
Really cool.
This is brilliant.
Kidproducts.com, K-I-H-D, products.com. And if you don't have one of their pocket bellows, that is the thing to get.
Oh, yeah.
I saw a guy looking at them, a bearded fella, and I walked up and I said, if you're constantly bending down and blowing into the fire pit, one of these will do yeah. you well. He looks over, sees my beard. Oh, you use them, do you? Yes, I do. Because there's nothing like almost singeing your beard in
yeah,
a fire.
Yeah.
So, I picked up one of those as well. I got you one. Merry Christmas. Yeah, happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
If you burn yourself on it, that's your own problem. I think that's all I got. What did you pick up? I know you bought some stuff.
I looked at more than I bought.
Oh, well, we all do that. You do the window shopping.
I had a, what would you call it? My Achilles heel was along, and so I saw a lot of stuff that I wanted to buy.
Oh, but it wasn't your Achilles heel. It was your subconscious.
Was that what you call
it? In wife format.
I kept seeing stuff. Oh, I want that. And it's always just a little remark like, what for? Why would you need that? Why do you think you need that? It's like, ugh.
Did you actually tell her why you thought you needed it? Maybe no, you should have done that.
Because sometimes when I speak out loud what I think I need it for, even when I vocalize it, then it starts to sound silly. And it's like, well, it sounded good in my head, but now that I'm vocalizing it.
Those two canoes I could wear as shoes don't sound so good when I'm saying it out loud. And picturing myself with a foot in each canoe walking across the lake.
So what's
it doesn't sound as good.
I've got a large I ordered a bunch of like OTG meals over the years.
Yep.
So we've got a lot of extra. And
we're almost at the end.
I see mine as a resource in case of like World War III or a natural disaster. So I don't mind having extra on hand because they're good for a couple of years. Anyway, so one of the very first freeze-dried food booths, which was Wanderlust Kitchen, I was like, oh, lentils. And so they had a pot on for warming, and it's like we could sample. We sampled the brown lentil curry. It's really good. And I think it was you that made fun of. Somebody made fun of me. Usually it's you, so that's why I'm thinking it's you. But
no, I made fun of the... Oh, you know what I made fun of is I'm not going camping with you if you're eating that.
Yeah. Anyways, it's a curry. It's a red brown lentil curry, yellow lentil curry, and a chickpea curry. Anyways, so she wanted to buy one package, and I said, "Oh no, get one of each." And she goes, "No, why one of each?" And I said, "Well, actually, why don't we get two of each?" And so we were kind of bickering back and forth in this, and the woman trying to sell us looked at us, stepped back. I don't want to cause trouble here.
Too late, lady.
So I bought six packages, two of each, and I'm happy that I did.
Well, see, I bought two of these penne ones because when we go on a trip, there's one for each of us.
Yeah.
Right? Now, some of these I found, and I don't know why I never thought of this before. If one of these is a bit too much, but it's for one person, but not enough for two, then you pour some of this out when you open it into a, like bring a Ziploc bag around. Yep. You pour a bit out from
snack
each of these
for later.
So that you have
a whole third
an extra,
one. Yeah.
You have a third one.
Yeah.
And
that
I'm sitting
work.
There, I think it was Tosh over at Camp Kitchen there. He's saying that's what, you know, you can empty it out, empty some of it out into a bag or something. I'm just sitting there thinking afterwards.
Why did that package you like that?
I was today years old when I thought. Well, because some days I could sit down and eat a whole one
yes.
of these. And then other days you're thinking I could probably eat maybe three quarters of
yeah.
that. So.
See, I'm wondering.
You can't un-dehydrate it.
No.
But this,
also there's
you know,
some
there.
Settling that occurs, right? So
yeah.
you may not have this here as it's mixed in the bag. It's perfect proportion. Mm-hmm. But if you kind of ladle some out into a third bag. And it's like, are you getting the right proportions? Are you getting all the spices? Eh, I don't know,
yeah. but it's a thought.
Yeah. Anyways, right. I thought the brown lentil curry and the yellow lentil curry, it's a nice different, something mm-hmm. different. I like something different, just like the Japanese recipe books you have.
Oh, for Jetboil. Yeah.
So it's like an Asian cuisine and you get to try it and something different. And like stuff like that with your Jetboil, your recipe book. That's kind of like my comfort food.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'll eat like potatoes and like a shepherd's pie, freeze dried or whatever, because I need the starches and whatever for energy. But you know what? If I'm going to sit around the fire and enjoy a meal, it's going to be something Asian, right?
Oh, there's some like ramen things in there mm-hmm. that you can do with fried tofu and stuff like everything's dehydrated.
Yeah.
That you just, yeah, rehydrate with some hot water sort
yeah.
of stuff and mix it up and got yourself like a nice ramen or something like that with different things. And, as I was saying there on Super Good Camping interview there, there's like the Asian supermarkets that are popping up everywhere.
Yeah.
The one up by us has a massive dehydration aisle
and
it's everything from like noodles and spices and vegetables and all that
yeah.
sort of stuff that you can go in there and grab all this dehydrated stuff, mix and match into whatever. I mean, try it out at home first.
Yeah.
And then when you got your thing down, you're like, boom. There's a baggie of,
yeah,
I just put that
exactly.
into a hot pot of X amount of boiling
yeah.
water, and I got myself a nice ramen.
Yeah.
And it's so easy to do now, and a lot cheaper than buying ready-made ones, right?
I remember a few times people laughed at me at work because I'll like show up at a meeting early in the morning, and I'll have a bowl of ramen that I just cooked up,
mm-hmm.
and they'll laugh at me and go, oh, breakfast ramen, huh? And it's like, thought of that. So
breakfast ramen.
So then I felt self-conscious, so I didn't eat the noodles until after the meeting and it was cold. It's like, damn you making fun of me. I like my
you
breakfast.
You eat K-Fry and pizza for breakfast on
yeah.
weekends. Why would you not eat
exactly.
Everything. You're an adult. You're allowed to eat
I can
whatever
do what
whenever
I want.
You want. And remember, if you don't actually cut the cake, it's still one piece of cake.
Exactly.
Stick with me, boy. You'll go far.
But yeah, so I did get some freeze-dried food. We got some, of course, we got some chocolate bars at the MEC booth, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I did get some instant coffee at the MEC booth. It's I meant to bring it with me, but I usually do the Starbucks instant packets.
Yep.
Anyways, these are similar in size and whatever, but it's a Canadian made branded coffee, whatever. So I was excited to try it. It's a little pricey, but I want to see what it's like. If I like it, maybe I'll find it cheaper online. Got a free tree.
Did you get a free tree?
Quartha. Halliburton, no. Is it Halliburton?
No, it was Quartha.
It was a Quartha.
Yeah,
their booth. They were giving away trees, so
yep.
I got a tree. And what I didn't get was, these are the things that I was looking at. So, a bike rack, a paddle, other freeze-dried food, spices, a canoe pack, axe oil, some barrel work stuff. There's this one. So, the Whiskey Jack, unfortunately. So, Whiskey Jack has been, they have this milk crate box. So they've created this box. It's a prototype, and you put a milk crate inside it, and you put stuff in it. It's a solid box for mm-hmm. packing stuff away, but it's also a seat. so you can sit on it for winter camping. And I went to buy it last year. Oh, no, it's a prototype. We're just telling people about it. So I went there this year. I said, okay, I want to buy this thing this year. Oh, it's still a prototype. We're working on it. I was like, you guys, this has been a prototype for 2 years now. When can I buy it? Because I want one. I've got the milk crate all ready to go to stuff in it. Anyways, so I didn't get that either. And another thing that I saw was Siobhan was against it for several reasons. So in one of the booths, so it's Lure the North, and then another booth.
The fur place.
Yes.
I knew that's where you were going. I looked at some of those beaver mitts and stuff like that. I'm not a...
Did you see the teddy bear?
Down on the chair.
Yeah. So anyways, the booth next to them have all these natural hand warmers. It's like a 3-inch square pad of beaver fur that you just stick in your mitt and you can grab it and squeeze it and it keeps you warm. Mm-hmm. It's like a natural hand warmer. And so those were $40. And at Fur the North, right next door, they have an entire pelt, a beaver pelt for $180. And it's like, I could buy one pelt.
Squares?
I could make a lot of squares. These could be Christmas gifts for next year. But she was against it for the fact that it was an animal had to die for it. And it's like,
I think with where they come from, they're harvesting the animals for food.
Yeah.
I don't have as much of a problem with that. If you're harvesting it, you're eating it and making mitts and stuff out of it, you know, that's their business is to do that. Mm-hmm. But they're not just skinning it and tossing the animal.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, I looked at the price of some of their stuff, and
it was pricey. Yeah. So yeah, when you're talking $400 for a pair of beaver mittens or whatever,
as much as I'd like to have a pair like that, and they keep your hands so warm.
I've seen a couple these guys that I follow on YouTube that are up in Alaska and stuff. They have these exact mittens, and they're out in like -50 degree weather, running their skidoos and running their dog sled teams, and their hands aren't getting cold, and it's like, these things are like, well, if it keeps an animal warm, it's got to keep you warm.
Right? But, yeah, I like to know where stuff like that came from before I even think of looking at it. That's a me thing.
Those are all the things I didn't get.
You didn't walk away with one of those, eh? A new pair of beaver leggings.
So, do you know the canoe packs that I like, the Eureka packs? The waterproof canoe packs. Mm-hmm. So you have Sea Line, right?
Yep.
I have a whole bunch of the Eureka canoe packs, which they don't make anymore. And so when they announced, we're not going to sell them anymore. So I went online and I found a couple packs out of Calgary and I had them shipped to me just because I like them and they're not that durable. I keep getting holes in mine. I have to patch them.
So you bought more?
I did. I bought extras because I know that they're going to get holes in them because when you get sand in a canoe and you have a pack in the canoe and it slides around, it's going to wear through. Anyways, at the TREQA Trika, at their booth, they had these. It looked almost identical.
The gray ones?
The gray ones. Yeah. So did you look inside the pack?
No.
So the gray material is semi-transparent. So when you open it up, the light comes from all around and lights up the interior. It's self-lit from sunlight.
Right.
So I almost said skylight.
Skylight.
The it's skylight. Got a skylight. anyways, and the material on it is, it's more robust, I think, than what the Eureka packs were. They've come up with their own type of material for the main part of the pack.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only, I think it was 180, 185, which is, I think, less than the Eureka packs were.
Yeah, because I know my Sea Line was 250.
Yeah.
Something like that.
So these are nice packs. And like I say, like I looked at it, I've thrown two of them out over the years, and I've got 1, 2, 3 packs still at the house of these Eureka packs.
Well, when they go, Now you know where to
go. I know. I'm going to go to these Trika people because they have their own line of tents and packs and duffels and waterproof packs and you name it. They got a little bit of one thing we looked at in their booth. They have the sample, the models you have of, hey, this is the tent we have. But they have
the miniature models.
The one tent size. It's like, can I buy these? I want some for my cats.
I want a cat tent.
I want a cat tent.
It matches my real one. Yeah, I looked at a couple. They have one that's almost the same as my Eureka Spitfire was.
Yes.
They have a couple. I love that thing.
Yeah.
It was about another 6 inches wider.
Okay.
I don't think it was any longer. It had a little net thingy at the top you could put stuff into.
Yes, yeah, a loft. Yeah,
it had that. They didn't have the fly for it. Okay. But it didn't look like it went out that far anyway. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it was very different than the Eureka Spitfire.
Yeah.
So I was like, good solo tent. But it had for lack of a better word, along the top, it had a spine pole.
Okay, yes.
Where mine didn't.
Yeah.
Mine had the one that goes over the top and one that goes over the feet. It didn't have one joining the two of them.
Yeah. Right? The spine pole, you're getting added weight, but what it does is it helps keep the fly off the inner tent so that you don't have outer tent getting rained on, touching the inner tent, transferring water and moisture.
Well, mine had a separate fly pole.
Okay.
So, and like I say, without seeing the fly on that one, I didn't know if it does or not.
Yeah.
But no, they look like some good product.
Yes. Yeah. It was amazing.
Yeah.
We looked at a bunch of tent stuff because we do need like a 2 to 3 man tent because if Siobhan wants to take Stella on hiking trips and Beckett doesn't like hiking trips. So I'm going to take Beckett on a canoe trip. So we need a couple smaller tents, not the big family tent, but something smaller for a couple of us.
Like a 3-person tent.
Yeah.
Which fits 2 people.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. One of those 2 pluses. We looked at a bunch of MEC ones and one of the things that just, I get it, it's whatever, it's, everybody has to make the money, but the 2-season tents with the flies, or the with the bug netting, you're looking at like $300, $400, $500.
Mm-hmm.
And so MEC had a couple 4-season tents there, and those were $800 to $900.
Oh, yeah. You had those extra couple seasons in there, and you're...
And we that's one thing with the Trika tents, they were cheaper... Which was, they were in the price range of like $250, $300, which was good, but they also didn't have the ripstop, which I kind of like the ripstop on a tent.
Yep.
Right? So I don't know. Like few of their tents were nice, high quality, but then the cheaper ones were showing. Right?
Yeah. And now we get to go to the Toronto Outdoor Adventure Show and do a whole bunch more looking.
Yeah, I'm going to go alone to that one.
All in all, it was a great weekend despite the weather.
It was good. It was really good.
And yeah, I'll definitely go back again for year 3 next.
And the bird guys were there again.
Yep, with the...
they had an owl, a 10-month-old owl, and a 10-year-old... what kind of hawk was it? They called it the fastest hawk in the world.
Hawk or falcon?
Falcon. That's it.
Peregrine falcon.
Peregrine falcon. Yep. It was a peregrine falcon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was really sleek. Neat. He was really sleek.
Yeah. He was a nice looking bird.
Yeah. So yeah. Can't wait to go back. Great job to everybody at the Hamilton Adventure Expo. From the organizers right down to the people that...
Yep.
In the orange shirts that told you where to go.
I'll tell you where
I'm talking to you, Gary. One of our buddies, Gary, works, has volunteered there last year and this year.
Oh, okay.
So every time we see him, he says, hey, every time I saw you wandering around, it was aimlessly. let's do a quick little chit-chat here. Recreational canoe market. The global recreational canoe market in a consumer good and retail category is projected to reach $1.8 billion U.S. by 2031.
we've talked about this in relation to kayaks before.
Yeah, now canoeing.
And now we're talking about canoes. So it's, the market is growing, and we've seen it right from, like, I think there has been a resurgence just at about the COVID time where a lot of people are going, ooh.
Yep, everybody wanted to get back out.
I forgot there was an outdoors.
So, recreational canoe market is expanding steadily as outdoor leisure participation rises and consumers seek affordable water sport equipment for lakes, rivers, and coastal inlets. Market size growth is supported by the tourism recovery, adventure travel interest, and community recreation programs that promote paddling activities, which we've seen a lot of.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, just chatting about it over the last few years is it just seems to be growing. Manufacturers focus on lightweight composites, rotomolded plastics, ergonomic seating to improve portability, durability, and comfort. Retailers are strengthening omni-channel distribution through specialty stores, rental centers, online platforms. Government investments in waterfront infrastructure and public parks encourage new users and organized events that simulate equipment demand. So North America and Europe remain the major revenue contributors due to established paddling cultures, while Asia Pacific records faster volume growth driven by domestic tourism and youth participation. So young people are wanting to get out there a lot more.
The youths.
Product bundling with paddles, safety gear, and transport accessories increases average transaction value. Overall market expansion reflects wellness trends and growing interest in outdoor activities globally. So this isn't just little spots here or there. This is global. By 2031, the recreational canoe market forecast indicates consistent compound annual growth driven by product innovation, expanding rental fleets, and increasing participation in ecotourism experiences. Brands will invest in modular designs, inflatable hybrids, and foldable frames to attract urban consumers with limited storage space. And we talk about that all the time, like the inflatable kayaks and,
well, it's a concern, and
stand-up paddle boards.
But
and
what's
such.
Neat is when they, with these inflatables, that they actually are creating these storage inside the pontoon part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm so curious how well a zipper like that can hold back pressure.
Well, apparently it's working.
I know.
I just wonder how many years you get out of it.
There is that too.
Right?
How many zips can it live for?
How many licks to the middle of the Tootsie Pop?
Exactly.
Sustainability strategies will intensify through recycled materials, low-emission manufacturing, and biodegradable packaging that strengthen brand reputation. Digital marketing, community events, and influencer partnerships will educate beginners and stimulate trial purchases. So that's like what we say is like, you know what? You don't need to go out and buy the most expensive ones to start.
Correct.
Start here with something cheap. Get used to it. Get into it. And if you don't like it, you haven't spent $5,000. You spent one.
Exactly.
Sort of thing, right? Competitive pricing entry-level models will broaden consumer access. The continuous evolution of technology is playing a vital role in driving the recreational canoe market forward. Cutting-edge innovations are improving product functionality, enhancing performance, and reducing costs, making these solutions more accessible to a broader range of industries. North America accounts for a large share of recreational canoe market, which is the result of developed technology, intense consumer market, and huge investments in the recreational canoe industry, which, yeah, we know we do. Europe has the fastest growing recreational canoe market and is oriented around environmental protection, renewed efforts, and environmental awareness.
Hmm.
Because there's a lot of stuff you see now that you used to not see, especially in the UK.
Yes.
Right? It just seems to be, I don't know if it's not been there, but it's more in your face now. You're reading more about it now.
It's becoming more prominent. And so I think it's a combination of social media, but I think it's a self-feeding thing. So the more popular it gets, the more you see in social media, which also draws more people in, becomes more and more popular. But it's not just that. It's also an awareness of environmental impacts. And people are going, well, I'm not going to buy some diesel-powered swamp buggy. I'm going to go canoeing type thing. So people are becoming more conscious of their imprint on the planet.
And how they spend their time outside.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, say, a $1,000 canoe is better than a $10,000 swamp buggy. The gross potential in the recreational canoe market is expanding, or expected to be maximum for Asia-Pacific region, increased maturation, urban migration, as well as expanding middle class in China, India, and Japan, and other developing economies are great constituents of market growth. Countries in areas like Latin America, Middle East, and Africa have also been showing moderate recreational canoe market growth. Although still developing, these markets are fueled by a fast increasing infrastructure, expanding industrial activities, and growing consumer demand for recreational canoe goods. So all over the world, the want for paddling is definitely growing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Right? 100%.
So, you know, to say, because I think it's like just over a billion a year, like 1.1 billion a year right now.
Currently, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So 1.8 billion. I mean, when you look at 0.7 billion, that's still a big chunk of cash in the next 5 years. Right? So, yeah. Awesome. More and more people out on the water. I was Googling, as one does. I came across Paddling Magazine, which one usually does. There's a good article in Paddling Magazine that you can check out online at paddlingmag.com, written by James Raffin, titled "The Quiet Rise of Solo Canoe Tripping: How lighter gear, digital tools have made going solo more accessible than ever before."
I meant to read this. I tried to get into it. I just got too busy at work. And
nerd.
I still want to read it. I just, unfortunately.
Definitely read the article, because I'm just going to brief over a few things he talks about. But back in the day, I started my canoe tripping career as a solo tripper, simply because I didn't know anyone else that was into canoe tripping. Eventually, that changed. I started doing group trips. But I still enjoyed my solo trips. It lets me get away from everyone and everything. Yeah, there's pros and cons to solo tripping. It used to be, you know, the fear of people. You don't go. I think Bill Mason even says this in his movie, is don't. You're always told don't go tripping alone. It's dangerous.
Yeah.
Maybe. So they say, has the art of solo canoe tripping become more prolific these days? James points out in his article that you only have to look at the multitude of solo canoe designs on the market these days from big canoe companies. Different trim packages and layups means you are no longer stuck with a 100-pound canoe that you have to portage all by yourself. Bear Paulson at North Star Canoes says that some paddlers turn to solo canoes because they're getting older or their partners have aged out. Some just want the solitude of nature, and others don't want to paddle with other people.
True. Yeah, I see that.
You know what? 100%. There's times where I like to be out there, and I don't want to be with anybody. I just want me time.
Exactly, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
My wife can go to the spa. I'm going to go out in the lake somewhere. 1,500 miles in. I have to say that my solo paddling falls into a couple of categories. One, I don't want company or noise and just want to be alone on the river or lake.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I just don't want the noise. Like, you're paddling and there's always somebody chit-chatting or whatever, and I just want to, you know,
yeah.
There's days where I just...
You get talkers, talk. You get... Yeah. So when I go with other people, or if I go with family, I always feel, okay, I got to be on point. I got to make sure this is ready. Got to make sure that's ready. And so it feels more like you're serving somebody, or you're catering to people and whatever. So it's nice when I'm on my own. I just have to worry about me.
Yep.
And if I don't want to have breakfast that morning... I just won't have breakfast. If I don't feel like making coffee and boiling water, I won't boil water. It, you know, it's just, it's one of those things. It's like, hey, I'm going to go fishing. It's getting late. I should be, you know what? I'm going to have a granola bar. I don't make supper. I'm going to stay out fishing for another hour.
I've had days like that. Like, I've had nasty, nasty paddle days.
Yeah.
And you get to camp and all you have enough energy to put up a tarp, put up your tent.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's like, I'm not even going to have a fire.
I'm just gonna
get into some warm clothes, grab a granola bar or something,
yeah.
Grab some water, and I'm just going to bed.
But with other people, if you're with a group or with your family, it's
you like, got to do dinner I've for everybody, do
this and yeah. that, yeah. and then the kids are gonna whine and hey, yeah.
So some this. Like I say, sometimes I just want to be alone,
just by yourself,
yeah. Or I just want to be alone on my own, in my own canoe. So I can zigzag all over the place if I want. Hence my Thanksgiving yep. birthday trips that mm-hmm. I started where everybody, you guys want to come along?
Yep.
You're in your own canoe.
In your own canoe, in
so
your own
tent. So if there's 10 people, there's 10 yep. canoes, right? And yeah, so like if I want to go check something out
exactly.
on the other side of the lake.
Hey, what's that red thing in yeah, the bushes there?
I can this? Go. What's I that? Can go check stuff out and somebody else can go check something else yeah. out and someone else can go another way. And, you know, we can head to all 10 corners of the yeah. compass.
Yeah. I'm going to take 2 hours to get next campsite. Everybody else is going to like hammer down and go get there in like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I'm just going to paddle along.
So that's how my solo trips end mm-hmm. up being. With the advent of lightweight gear, solo tripping has been made easier. No longer are there big heavy tents and chairs and stoves. So I know some people put all their gear in one pack now. Looking at you, Mike Burns. throw it on their pack, throw their ultralight canoe on their shoulders and do the portage in a single carry. Looking at you, Mike Burns, while he sits there and gripes at the end. The other rest of us are double portaging. So, yeah, I mean, with the light, but like that, yeah, I mean, there's stuff that I just won't leave at home, but there's other stuff that, like, I don't carry the big stove anymore. I don't yeah. carry a lantern anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't carry the big folding chair anymore. I just got a little Helinox style chair now, you know. So, there's all those lightweight gear has made it easier to do this sort of thing. Digital GPS and safety devices have led to people being more confident solo tripping.
Exactly.
Right?
You have an opportunity to just save yourself easier if you trip, break a leg or something. It's like, you know, you're not so worried. A lot of people are like, oh, I can't be out there alone. What if I trip and fall, hurt myself?
Right?
So.
And it's peace of mind for those at home that can, because, I mean, mine has the track button,
yeah.
so they can follow they can along where I am. And
that you're drifting down a river dead. And
yeah, well, far they know I'm drifting down the river. Oh, he's right on target. They don't know I'm dead. Well, I did get better. But, you know, I leave my safety plan at home with where I'm going to be, the map saying day one, day two, day three, you know, where I'm hoping to be sort of thing. And they follow along to see, make sure I'm on track and can start to, well, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't leave camp two. And then the next day, all of a sudden, I've made it from camp two to camp four
yeah.
because there's weather or something.
Exactly.
James says, my sense is today's interest in solo canoeing is less about rugged individualism and isolation and more about practicality. Many paddlers seem to go out solo out of necessity, adapting to busy lives and schedules, which is totally true. I've had to turn down trips and have had others turn down invites because our schedules just don't match.
Yeah.
Look at right now. They're trying to do the family day winter camping trip.
Yes.
And out of
a bunch of us,
eight people, like there's three
yeah.
that all have the same
yeah.
available time.
Exactly.
Right. So yeah. that's happening more and more. So, you know, you just unfortunately can't get the people. So you just, you know what? I'm just going to go on my own.
Mm-hmm.
Back in 2002, cultural commentator Howard Rheingold published a book called Smart Mobs, The Next Social Revolution, which explored the ways electronic technology influences social connections and communities. Rheingold called these digitally connected social circles communities of one, which can both empower and isolate. The worry is when we find communities that resonate with our personal worldview, we risk disconnecting from local face-to-face interactions, which are essential to the creation of functioning neighborhoods and communities. So, I mean, in that respect, how did we meet?
We met on, I think our first time I met you was, it was a group with Algonquin Adventures. On Lake started with a B. Yeah.
Well, we met on the Algonquin Adventures website.
Website.
Our forum.
Forum.
Right? That's where a lot of people meet online.
Yeah.
And they get so into that is your community,
mm-hmm.
and you're not going out and meeting people. You're actually just sticking there, yeah. right? Chatting all the time. James finished his article with, "The growth of solo canoeing may be a reflection, neither bad nor good in and of itself, of Western civilization's move towards communities of one. My sense is, however, as long as we choose to express our love of paddling, solo, tandem, dragon boats, war canoes, whatever, and to share the joy as widely as possible with each other, with new friends, on the water, off the water, working always to keep the rivers clean and wildlands wild, the world will be a better place." I'll say that I've thought about it after reading the article, and I've noticed a number of solo paddlers that I know have increased over the years. Like when I first started paddling, like I think there was maybe two other people I knew that would go out by themselves.
Yep.
And now so many people
go out by
yeah. themselves.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of YouTube videos and people, yeah, I'm going for a 3 day or 4 day. I'm going out for 10 days.
Yeah.
And it's solo, right? Gone are the days of people saying you can't go out tripping because it's so dangerous. I mean, people still say.
Yeah.
Right? As long as you use your brain,
yeah.
I think it is actually safer now than it's ever been.
Oh, yeah.
Anyone thinking of trying it should start with a weekend and go from there. Just if you're not sure, go do an overnighter somewhere.
Just do a single night, yeah.
Paddle in somewhere. Set up all your stuff. The nighttime is the worst. If you can handle a night by yourself.
Yep.
Because this is the thing is, once you set up camp, once you have your dinner, once you clean everything up and you're sitting by the fire having a drink or something like that, or enjoying watching the stars, cooking some marshmallows, and then it's like, okay, well, now it's 8 o'clock at night. What do I do for the next few hours? Once, if you can figure out what to do in that time and not get bored or start,
yep.
you know, well, now what do I do? Or wigging out. If you can get comfortable being by yes. yourself,
yeah.
then you're going to go from that overnighter into like eventually you'll be doing a week-long trip easy.
Mm-hmm.
Again, there's pros and cons to tripping solo. You know, like, hey, can you go get firewood? Oh, wait, I'm by myself.
Yes.
Hey, can you go filter the... Oh, wait.
So that did work out quite well because... Like when I'm with family, it's like, okay, so the kids do the tent and lay out the bed rolls yeah. and inflate the air mattresses and I'll gather wood and get a fire going and Siobhan will set up gear and chairs and whatever. And so it's shared effort, but I don't mind doing it all myself either.
Right.
So it's,
if you can get into all of that,
yeah.
you're going to get hooked. So go to paddlingmag.com, read the full article, The Quiet Rise of Solo Canoe Tripping. And, is definitely has changed over the years. That's yes. for sure. I got one more thing here to talk about.
Oh, we almost did it in an hour.
Nah. Where's the fun in that? I would sell you for the chance to hold a platypus.
You'd sell me?
I would sell you to the lowest bidder.
How much do platypuses cost? Platypi?
Nope. Platypuses.
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 Platypus. Yep. Platypuses.
Platypuses.
Moose and meese.
Moose and meese. House heist. If someone were going to say, "You give us Derek, we'll give you a platypus." It's been nice knowing you, Derek.
You know, their little dew claws are like poisonous. Toxic, poisonous.
Yep, yep. Doesn't matter. I don't care. There's just something about a platypus. At some point in my life before I die, my bucket list is I want to hold a platypus.
You want to be bitten by a platypus.
I don't care. As long as I'm holding him when he bites me, then I'm good with that. I would love to hold a platypus. There's just something about a platypus.
Yes. Very unique.
That just, I yeah. It's hard to find anything more comfortable on water than the elite athletes competing at the 2025 ICF Slalom World Championships, International Canoe Federation. But Australia's iconic platypus might just be the gold standard. Penrith Lakes Environmental Education Center teamed up with Paddle Australia to highlight the platypus on a global scale during the 2025 World Championships. During the event, they hosted family-friendly workshops around water testing, dip netting, and platypus talks to let locals and international visitors alike become experts in the Aussie creature, who is also part of the event logo. So you got all these people from around the world coming and to this event.
Yeah.
What better time to snag them into an environmental teaching thing?
Yes.
Platypus is one of the world's most remarkable animals. Yes, it is. But it faces serious threats to its survival. Catherine Warwick, a platypus researcher from Western Sydney University, wanted to bring people's attention to the platypus and their existence in Hawkesbury Nepean River catchment. For the platypus, they are the most unique species in the world. To share them with everyone from across the world has been wonderful. We are representing the Hawkesbury Nepean River Platypus Project. Mm-hmm. We are teaming up with Paddle Australia. There's a lot of P's in this.
I know.
All that's going through my mind right now as I'm saying all this is, don't pop your P's.
P's on the microphone, yeah.
We're teaming up with Paddle Australia to remind people that the platypus is surviving in this catchment. Our goal is to make sure that people are paddling with purpose and care and be aware of the environment around them. Remember we talked about the dogs on stand-up paddle boards?
Yep.
They're teaching the dogs to sniff out platypus?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Sisses? Platypi?
That's a cool thing. Goal in education around the World Championships was all about raising awareness of the environment and helping instill a sense of accountability. It's been wonderful to see children get really involved with the platypus and see the grassroots movement build up. Protecting our environment is going to be a team effort. If we can start with our youngest, we can start to build that as we move into adults, and we can start to build a generation of people who want to protect our rivers, our environment, and our platypuses. See? Platypuses.
I get it.
Informed children make informed adults, and informed adults make responsible environmental decisions. Which is the whole thing why I think is this cool that they've included something like this, used the World Championships as
exactly
a gateway into this.
And what I think is unique to it is so they're coming off as, hey, let's protect the platypuses, but they're also saying let's protect the environment. And it kind of a double-edged sword. It's like, if I protect the environment, I protect the platypuses. If I protect the platypuses, I protect the environment. I like platypi. I like platypi. Anyways, it's a way to get people more interested in environmental concerns by protecting the platypus, and so they protect each other. It's kind of a combined effort, and it kind of makes it more saleable than, hey, let's protect the environment. So, no, let's protect this unique creature, and in the end, we'll do better for the environment.
Exactly. We use homemade dip nets and encourage kids to make their own dip nets. They can go down to their local creek or stream and catch some water bugs. We have also been catching microinvertebrates, or small things living in the water that happen to be the food of the platypus. These things carry good bioindicators, which means they can tell us about the ecosystem and water health, quite commonly used by Blue Mountains Council. Penrith Lakes Environmental Education Center engages over 10,000 students every single year from kindergarten to year 12 in high-quality, curriculum-linked fieldwork programs designed to support learning across multiple key learning areas.
Hmm.
Get the kids involved.
Yes.
Do it now. I mean, that's they
are our future.
Yeah. That's the whole debate thingy that I brought up when we were talking about, well, you know, they're talking about making PFDs law. Well, you get the kids to wear them,
mm-hmm.
and eventually it's just a habit to wear them.
Exactly. It's just normal.
Right.
Like now, I can't even, it's reflexive. It's one of those automatic things that when I get into a car, I just put a seatbelt on.
Yeah.
I don't even think about it. It just happens. I've been trained right from a kid, right? So
if you can get them to take care of the water and that sort of stuff and be mindful of the platypuses and you keep the water and every environment clean to help them out, then next you know, by helping them, mm-hmm. we've actually kept everything good
exactly.
for us.
Exactly.
We can get on this clean lake and this clean river and enjoy it now. Again, great idea to use large events like the Slalom World Championships.
It's great platform to spread information.
Big time.
Outdoor shows.
Just got a... Well, one's now off our list.
Yes.
We have the Toronto Outdoor Adventure Show coming up February 20th to 22nd, International Center in Mississauga out by the airport. Everything for outdoor fun and travel, lots of speakers, different stages, water demo pool. Have we ever seen Kevin Callan in the water demo pool?
No. Is he going to do that?
I don't know if he usually does, I'm pretty sure.
Does he?
Yeah, we should take things to throw at him, like rubber ducks or something. Start chucking rubber ducks. Outdooradventureshow.ca for more details. If you're not in the Toronto area, go to the outdooradventureshow.ca, and there's dates for Vancouver, Calgary, and Montreal as well. Quiet Adventure Symposium, one of our favorite shows to attend, but this year, unfortunately, not. Saturday, February 28th, this is the 31st annual symposium, held at Michigan State University Farm Bureau Pavilion in Lansing, Michigan. If you got the chance to go, definitely go. Help support them. Make sure you check out the rabbit show next to it. quietadventures.org. Yeah, it's one of our favorite to get down there. Just so friendly. It's not a massive, massive show where it's like, you know, 15 buildings and whatnot. There's a lot of vendors to check out. There's some demo stuff to try, a bunch of presentations to go listen to, that sort of thing. So I'd put this sort of like the Hamilton show that we were just at, mm-hmm. both size-wise.
Yep.
So it's definitely a good one to go check out if you're down in the Michigan area or states that encircle it. last Canucopia, March 13th to 15th, Madison, Wisconsin at the Alliant Energy Center. Tons of speakers and vendors, so much information under one roof. Like the speakers alone is worth the trip. We're at the price of admission. Rutabaga.com/Canucopia for more information.
So we tend to talk about shows that are in within reach of us by vehicle. So if anybody wants to reach out and tell us about shows that are in their area, whether in Germany, Australia, whatever, just, reach out and say we can talk about the show that you would go to this year. We'd be happy to hear from you. And
if you want to buy us a plane ticket to Germany, Australia, we'll gladly come and we'll look at the show.
Because I know from previously we've seen there's a gigantic outdoor show in Germany.
That's usually October, if I'm not mistaken.
Fall, I believe.
Yeah. We should actually just go one day.
One day? Just one day?
Yeah, just one day, yeah. Fly over, go to the show, fly back.
Yeah, red eye.
Not even, like, get a hotel.
No hotel.
Just fly there. No bags, no nothing.
Exactly.
Fly there, see the show, fly home.
Sounds like the start of a really bad idea.
I'm in then. That sounds awesome is what it sounds like. You got anything else?
I do not.
I'm circled by all this stuff here. These foods and bannocks and this jute tube and can of Guinness. Just, yeah, and that just makes me, like I say, this is the time of year when the shows start.
Yes.
That I just get that urge to.
I know.
It's time to go. It's time to start packing. Yeah. I'm starting to, time to start planning.
We haven't
planning.
Even had a chance to grow cabin fever yet, and we're just starting to go shows. So it's nice. It's that
I'm digging out all the
break.
Maps.
Are you?
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Digging out all my maps. I got a lot of things to plan this year.
I've been talking with a bunch of people at work about trips. One guy's, he's starting solo right now, but he wants to do from Tim River down to Canoe Lake. And I'm thinking, oh, late May. I could probably do that. He's already booked.
Late May. There's bugs.
Yes, but
on the Tim bugs on the Tim River, dude.
I know.
And you're going to go bananas
we,
day one.
I tell
one.
You, we did talk about this. We did discuss this. And he said, and I said, well, you know, maybe it'll be a colder late spring and they won't hatch. And
and may lifesavers fly out my butt. Yeah, mosquitoes. Hey, stranger, do you remember the year of 26 when the mosquitoes didn't hatch? That was a great year, wasn't it?
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, I can remember it like it was yesterday. You're one of those old guys in the old nursing home in 2060. Yeah, exactly. I remember the spring of 26. The mosquitoes didn't hatch.
We've been calling ourselves 26ers ever since.
You kids don't know today. Yeah, whatever, dude. Tim River and me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It could work. It could work.
Good luck, buddy. Good luck. I won't be there. Good luck.
I'm only thinking about it. I haven't committed.
Oh, you should be committed. Doing the Tim River. Yeah. Got to get all this stuff planned and down in my calendar. Start reserving my vacation days.
Yep.
I don't want to jinx myself, but I'm going to do it anyway. There's nothing big on the horizon so far this year that's going to interfere with any of my trip plans.
But aren't you busy buying your veterinarian a new boat?
Oh, yeah. My vet's getting a brand new boat on my behalf. Yeah. I think they're up to almost a yacht now.
Yeah.
Between our animals. Oh, well, whatever. Anyway, if you've got nothing else, and I've got nothing else, and no one's got anything else. If you want to find us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream all our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com, and you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. And one last thing, all the people that stopped us while we were at the Hamilton Adventure Expo to say, hey, listen to your show, love your podcast, how you guys doing? Thanks for stopping us and saying hello. It means a lot to us. And on that note, I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.